God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. If you could raise your hand or wave at the camera or otherwise make yourself known, you can unmute yourself. Everyone still has that privilege.
Hi, Chris, alcoholic, coming back into the rooms, day six.
Chris, welcome. Glad you're here, brother.
Hey, David, thanks.
Anybody else?
Yes, Rob, alcoholic, 13 days right now, so.
Rob, welcome. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? Just my spidey senses tell me there's like one more. There's just one more in here. All right, fair enough. Dan, would you read the preamble? I'm going to put it up on the screen. Would you mind?
Sure.
Thank you.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Leanne. All right. The format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to welcome Marty R. from Buda, Texas. And she'll tell her story after she finishes up. Around the top of the hour, we'll take a short break, call for announcements, Seven Tradition, etc. And then we will ask the questions that you have placed into the chat to the user questions. So feel free to do that anytime throughout the meeting, and we'll remind you again at the top of the hour. So super excited to have Marty here tonight. Don't want to take up another moment of her time. Marty.
Thank you so much, David. Really, really appreciate being here tonight. My name is Marty Ruby, and I am an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date of October the 19th of 1989, and I'm as grateful as I know how to be about that. And I got to tell you, I got to spend a little time talking with David before y'all got here, and come to find out David is about 5 or 6 days behind me in his sobriety date. And like I said, you know, David, I get that we're real close together, but in 6 days, you'll have a much better understanding of what it's like to be sober. So I'm awfully glad to be here tonight. I'm awfully glad to be anywhere sober. And thank you so much for having me. I told you my sobriety date. I have a home group. It's called the Buda Big Book Group here in Buda, Texas. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I sponsor people who sponsor people, and that's the way this thing works, is one alcoholic talking to another, sharing experience, strength, and hope. I hope I get to do that tonight, and I'm sure I'm going to give it a try. You know, this whole Zoom thing, right? So here we are, and I have, you know, I remember being real, real excited at first. Well, not excited at all about Zoom, because, you know, I love my meetings. I love my home group. Right. And then it's like, well, ain't gonna be no home group for a while. So but we do have this Zoom thing. And so that was real exciting in the beginning. And you know, oh, look at us. We're going all over the world. We get to be in Virginia on a Sunday night and wherever else you want to go. And that was all great. And that's all exciting. And I've also got a little bit of Zoom fatigue because I miss you. I really miss you. I miss your face. I miss the way you laugh. When I miss the way you interact, I miss your vibrations. I miss the way you smell. Nothing smells like an alcoholic, am I right? And and I just miss being with you. I miss being with you. But here we are. You know, this is what we have. And thank God we do. You know, I remember being very concerned that how's the newcomer going to find us? I'll be God darn if they haven't found us. They have found us. And Rob J with 13 days is proof of that, right? Here he is. He's right amongst us. And I really want to welcome you, Rob. I want to welcome anyone who's new. You know, if you're new, doggone, we're glad you're here. So good to see you. We've got a place right here for you. And I also want to say, if you're as old as me and David, maybe even older, I want to say thank you for staying, right? Because if you're not here when I get here, then I don't have anyone who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with me so that I can continue to stay sober. So old timers, long timers, however you want to put it, thank you for being here. And I also want to say, if you are coming back, if you've been away from us for a while and you have come back, I want to say, welcome home. Welcome home. We've missed you. We've saved your place. And we're so glad to see you. You know, back to that Zoom thing, I also believe that, you know, we have what we have, and I don't know about you, but it looks like we might be doing it for a little while longer. And I do believe, you know, with the newcomers being able to find us and the meetings that we're able to have and this places that we're able to go, that God may not be for all things, but I do believe he is in all things. And so as much as I want to have this love-hate relationship with Zoom, I know that God shows up every single time. So I have a friend who says, you know, about these talks that we get to give, because, you know, a lot of what it sounds like is you're talking to yourself, right? Because you don't hear the laughter and you just don't hear anybody responding to you. So it can often sound like you're talking to yourself. And so my friend Gemma says, oh, for God's sakes, why don't you just talk and think about someone other than yourself? You know, because selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. It has always been the root of my problem, and it will continue to be the root of my problem. But the beauty is, I have a God that has all power, and I am delighted about that. You know, so like I said, I'm going to try to tell you a little bit of what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I can tell you what I'm doing. I'm not in Buda, Texas tonight. I'm in the great state of Louisiana, and that's where my people come from. And I'm probably going to get all choked up about this because I'm here with my friend, Dr. Rachel, and I'm here with my Aunt Dodie, and I'm here with my sweet cousin, Michelle. And, you know, there was a time when there weren't women who wanted to get together with me, you know, and I certainly didn't have a clue about what it meant to be here in love and service. You see, and sometimes in our lives, we go through hard times. And in these hard times, we can turn to people who we can trust and who we are confident love us and who we are convinced will make us laugh. And that is something I've gotten to do with these women over this weekend, to try to show up to the best of my ability in love, in service, and in laughter. And isn't that what being sober is all about? You know, we are not a glum lot. And if newcomers could see no laughter in our lives, they wouldn't want what we have. And so I'm just so grateful that I get the privilege of being in the cluster of some of the most beautiful women I've ever known. So that's why I'm here in Louisiana this weekend. You know, I can tell you this, as you know, I come from Louisiana. I come from good people. My parents were good people. They had strong morals. They worked hard. They were consistent. They loved me madly. You know, they did everything in their power so that I would be a happy, well-adjusted childhood. The only trouble is I came out of the womb going, well, what about me? What about me? You know what? There ain't enough for me. There ain't enough for me. There ain't enough love. There ain't enough money. There ain't enough whiskey. You know, there just ain't enough nothing. And it didn't matter. You know, like they said, I needed a nice strong drink when I was about 7. And didn't get one. So that didn't mean I wasn't trying. I can tell you this, that my parents being who they were, my mother was a devout Catholic at the time I was born, and my father was a rocket scientist and a self-proclaimed agnostic. How these two ever got together, it's beyond my imagination, but they did, and here I am. So it worked out for me. But I also believe that alcoholism is a family illness. I believe that with all my heart. And while my parents were not alcoholics, they had a couple of children who are. And I had an older brother whose alcoholism burst upon the scene, as it does, when he was about 16 and I was about 8. And so, bless my family's heart, they did the best they could with all of that. Now, in the meantime, I think this is an important factor, that as my mother was a Catholic, we went to church a lot. We went to church a lot. And that's what you did back in the 60s. You went to church, and you went to church a lot if you were a Catholic. And that's what we did. And what happened for me is that I formed an opinion, an idea, a belief, a conception of a higher power, God, if you will, when I was about 7 or 8. And it wasn't a personal relationship. It wasn't something that made me feel warm and fuzzy. It wasn't because people weren't trying to give that to me. I just couldn't hear it. I just couldn't hear it. And so the concept I had of a God was one of scary, that I was going to be in trouble, that I would be punished. And so the way it worked out for me is I said, I have an idea, God, because I love to have good ideas. I have an idea, God, and this idea is you stay in your corner and I'll stay in mine. And so at about 7 years old, my self-reliance fired up and I'm good to go, right? I don't need your God. I got it. I got this thing. Just y'all just hide and watch. And so I do believe, like I said, that alcoholism is a family illness. And my brother came down as my brother's alcoholism intensified. My family just didn't know what to do. I didn't know any alcoholics I didn't know any alcoholics who had actually recovered. Let's put it that way. I knew a lot of people who drank because that's just kind of what we are from Louisiana. That's what you do. Right. And so so I didn't know anybody who ever recovered from alcoholism or recovered from heavy drinking or stopped drinking. It just didn't happen. And so my parents did the best they could. But because of alcoholism and the insidious nature, the cunning, baffling and powerful, the power of it, my family disintegrated under the weight of alcoholism, because that's what happens. Right. The whole family gets sick. And like it says, it engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers, right? And so that's what happened. I can tell you, I went to school and I got out and I moved to Austin, Texas from, we were living in Houston at the time. And I grew up there outside of the Manned Spacecraft Center. And I got out of there as quickly as I could, and I moved to Austin. And always like to say, it doesn't take long for a girl like me to meet a boy like you. Of course I'm going to meet a boy like you. You don't think a normal boy would hold my attention for very long, you know, because A, he's probably going to complain about my drinking. Can't have that, right? So I find a boy like, and after all, who's more interesting than alcoholics? Nobody, right? Because who's more chaotic than an alcoholic? Nobody. So anyhow, I find this old boy pretty quickly, and he's making money, and I'm making money. And, you know, my spiritual life had been kind of this vacuum. And I remember saying a prayer when I got to Austin, and I said, dear God, if you would let me make enough money where I could drink as much as I want and do all of alcohol's little friends, alcohol and all of its other forms, you and me would be good. right? And so sometimes God's answers to your prayers are no, and sometimes they're not. So I ended up starting to make a bunch of money, and I met this old boy, and he was making a bunch of money, and nothing alcoholics like better than rapid involvement, right? So it's, you know, so that how can you tell when two alcoholics are in love? Well, by the third date, they're living together, but they're still paying rent on the other place, right? And so that's what we did. You know, it didn't take long, and we got all tangled up in the sheets, and we kept paying rent on the other place because, you know, we have fear of commitment, right? You know, I mean, come on. And so, but I could tell you this, that I had no idea. I had not one clue what it meant to love another human being. I really didn't. What I was trying to do was to wrest satisfaction from this life if I only managed well, right? You know, like if he would only, then I would. That old idea. If you know, if only he would stay put, the show would be great. If only he would do as I wished, wouldn't it be great? Everyone would be pleased, but mostly me. So so I didn't have anything. And I love to think about that, you know, it was all about getting someone to love me, getting someone to pay attention to me, getting all of that neediness, all of that demand, all of that insistence on paying attention to me, and never having a concept of the St. Francis prayer. And not only did I not have a concept of what it could possibly mean to give love rather than to get love, to be able to understand rather than to be understood, I not only didn't have a concept of it, even if I had, I didn't value it, right? Really what I was looking for was for you to meet my needs, right? I need to set some boundaries with you, and I need to get my needs met, and I need some self-care. I had no clue what it meant to be in love and service. Those words were not in my vocabulary, right? I can tell you that when we got together, we married quickly. Of course we did. And of course I'm pregnant quickly. Of course I am, right? It's really hard to drink the amount that I'm drinking and practice safe sex. I'm just saying. Anybody else? I end up pregnant really quickly, and I'd love to tell you that, you know, I had sufficient reason to stop drinking, and I did, and I didn't do anything else, and that was enough for me, and I ended Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been here ever since, and that's not my story. It's not. I tried as hard as I could to not drink, but I didn't understand anything about powerlessness. I didn't understand what unmanageability meant. What I thought it meant, you know, what I thought was that I made all of those sweet promises that I wouldn't take a drink, right? And that what I thought was happening was by about 10:30 a.m., I changed my mind, right? I just changed my mind. And suddenly, because I didn't understand the insanity behind that first drink, the thought came to me that a drink is a good idea. Or someone pushed a drink my way, and I took it. And one more time, I'd be pounding my fist on the kitchen table going, how did this happen? This is not who I want to be. This is not what I want to be doing. I've got moral and philosophical convictions galore, I promise you, but I could not live up to them no matter how much I wanted to. So I end up having this baby, and I got to tell you, you know, alcoholism in a home is a tragic thing. It's a tragic thing. And so my alcoholism had come to live in my husband's home, and now we have a baby, and bless that little baby's heart. You know, I'm a mean drunk, as a friend of mine says, girl, you're a bad drunk. I'm a bad drunk and I'm a mean drunk. And I like to throw things, and I like to break things, especially windows or skillets or whatever's handy. I'm chunking it, and I'm chunking it at your head. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing that, and I got this little baby, and bless his little heart, you know. But you would think that would be enough, but it's not. And so it doesn't take long. And you know, 18 months later, I'm pregnant again. And I, you know, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, what should have been a happy event was met with dread on my part. It was met with dread, you know, because what I knew at that moment was that I needed to quit drinking, and I knew I couldn't quit drinking, right? Didn't matter how great the necessity or wish. That's the insidious nature of alcoholism. And so, you know, I'd love to tell you that now I had sufficient reason, that somehow there was some magic intervention, and I came to my senses, and I did a turnabout and did the right thing, and I didn't. And I continued to drink with that second child, only it was worse. Gradually things got worse, and they did for me. And they did. And I remember about a year and a half ago, I asked my sponsor this question. And you know, sometimes I like to go challenge my sponsor, you know, challenge her. See if this time she's really going to love me, right? If she's really going to care about me, if she really has an answer this time, right? So far, so good. I can tell you that much. But I said to her, you know what? That nine-step promise that says we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, that has always haunted me. Now, I don't wish to shut the door on my past. I think my dark past is my greatest asset. But I have always regretted my behavior when I was pregnant. And she said the most beautiful thing to me. And she said, oh, darling, you see, Bill Wilson wrote that book when he was 4 years sober. And Bill Wilson never had children. And that was just it just allowed me to breathe in a whole new way. I think there are those of us, both men and women, who have experienced parenthood who have regrets, certainly remorse. And if you do, I want to say welcome. And if you don't, I want to say good for you. But I do tell you this, I do not wish to shut the door on it. I won't shut the door on it. If I think for one moment I can help one person, I will give you everything I have. I will lay everything I have at your feet. And if my behavior while pregnant will help you, you got it. It's all yours. It's all God's is what it is. He can do with it. He can build with me as he sees. So while this is going on, now I'm still throwing things. I have that second baby and he's okay. He's got everything he needs, you know, body parts and all that kind of stuff. He seems healthy. And I can tell you this, you know, one baby I could kind of fool myself through, kind of bluff my way through motherhood. But once I had two, I couldn't do it. I couldn't. Like I say, these babies want to eat. They want to be clean. They want to be tended to. It's just endless, right? They're just relentless. And so, you know, I've got, while this is going on, alcoholism is just festering in my home. And I'll never forget. My first son would take his Lego bucket. He's just a little toddler, right? He would take his Lego bucket and he'd put it over his head. He just wanted it to stop, right? Bless his little heart. You know, the window breaking, the skillet throwing, the screaming, the name calling, the all, you know, all of that went on every single day in my home. And I never want to lose the image of that bucket on his head, because that is who I am without a God in my life. That is who I am. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. And I am absolutely an unlovely creature. And I'm willing to go to any lengths so that I don't have to be that unlovely creature again. So, you know... There was also at this time, me and my husband were engaged in a lot of hall sex, you know, where you pass each other in the hall and you scream, screw you, at the top of your lungs. And all of this is going on. And I remember my second child was about 8 months old, and I fell to my knees one morning you know, one of those dreadful hangover, oh my God, mornings. How am I going to face today mornings? And I fell to my knees and I said that prayer, probably the most powerful prayer I've ever uttered. And I said, God, I don't know what to do. And that was it. I got up. I continued drinking. I continued, doing all the other things I'd been doing. I continued throwing skillets. I continued screaming. Nothing changed. But also in that moment, everything changed. Everything changed. See, my mother, who's from Louisiana, my mother, who loved her daughter, right? And who was terrified, who was watching her daughter die in front of her eyes, had been terrified. And she called my girlfriend, my best drinking buddy. Who else she gonna call? My only drinking buddy. She called her and she says, I'm terribly worried about my daughter. Do you know what to do? Now, here's where it gets really good. My drinking buddy had disappeared on me. And I had heard she had gone to this A&A thing. I didn't know what that meant. But the rumor was she was not drinking, which made me clearly not want to be hanging out with her again. But she, here's where it gets so good. My mother calls her, asks her if she knows what to do. And my friend was able to say, yes, I do. I do know what to do. And the reason she knew what to do is because she'd been hanging around you. And when she didn't know exactly what to do, she called you and she asked you, what do I do with my friend's mother who's calling me about my friend? And you told her. You told her precisely what to do. You gave her clear-cut directions, right? And you gave her help. You laid all the tools at her feet. And she arranged for this, you know, the living room scene with the letters and the plan, the intervention, the treatment center. All you have to do is say yes. Well, that's a hard word to get out, isn't it? Yes. And so that's what happened for me. And I said, okay, uncle, I'll go. But here's the deal. She has, because I was going to a very dramatic, very cinematic exit to Arizona, right? I was living in Texas. I was going to go to Arizona to get sober, to go to treatment. Didn't realize I was getting sober. To go to treatment. And I said, I'll go, but she has to go with me. To which she said, of course I will. And the most beautiful thing that chokes me up every time I think about it is my friend had 21 days sober. 21 days. And she got on that, Rob, 21 days. And she pulling an intervention and taking me to treatment and saved my life. Not only did she save my life, she saved the life of my family, of my children, of my mother. It engulfs all whose lives touch the recoverers. I believe that as well. And so that's now I can tell you that it would have been in a completely ineffective endeavor had I not been convinced of the hopelessness and futility of my life as I had been living it, right? That prayer that I don't know what to do encapsulates hopelessness to me. I got nothing, God. I got nothing. And if an alcoholic comes to you and says, I got nothing, I've run out of ideas, we're like, yay, we got one. We got something to talk about. We got something to talk about. If you still got good ideas and you're going to keep doing it your way, then I'm going to say, vaya con Dios. I'm saving up. But I got a seat if you want to come back. If you want to come back. Now, you know, I remember when I got back that I had so many wonderful experiences. And one of the most powerful experiences for me is I got back, I went to a home group. That was down the street from my house, because that's what I do. And I went down the street, and when I got there, it was this big old room. It was 100 people in this meeting. You know, I didn't know any better. But what happened was there was an old timer, and her name was Mona. And I like to think of, you know, when I met Mona, she seemed like she was 1,000 years old. And I can tell you, she's about my age now. right? I was 28 when I showed up. And so Mona seemed like she was 112. And so, but what she would do for me, what she would do for me every day was she'd wait for me to come through that door and she'd say, honey, come sit by me. Come sit by me. I've saved you a seat. And every day Mona saved me a seat. So I didn't have to be afraid when I walked in there. I didn't have to feel any more awkward than I already did. She already knew all that about me. And she provided that beautiful feather bed landing for me to come into that group day in and day out until I had the courage to come in by myself and take my seat next to Mona. And she was so great. She was so helpful. She would say things like this. Somebody would start talking in the meeting and she'd go, you really need to pay attention to what she says. Okay, so I'm paying attention. Somebody else would start talking and she'd go, don't worry about him. He's an idiot. Don't listen to any of it. So I got to learn discernment very early on. That was important. And what was so great was she would do things for me like this. Now that you've been here a while, you need to become of service. I want you to pick up all of these ashtrays and wash them out. Now, that to me was the first time someone had asked me to do anything in a long time. And it's the first time I felt like I belonged in a long time. I was a somebody. I had the ashtray commitment. Da 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 da. Right? And it meant everything to me. It really, really did. I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I got really busy, but here's the thing. I had a couple of kids and I had this, I was married to someone I had no business being married to, right? He's a good guy. He's a great father, right? And he and I can safely say today that we are friends, but we had no business being married to each other, right? I'm giving it the old college try. What I think is if I have one more baby, that ought to do it. That ought to cement this relationship. Look, I like Debbie. She's laughing. She knows what I'm talking about. So that's what I said about doing. And I have another baby. And here's what happened for me. I became, and it lays it out in the book. It talks about when a man gets sober, or a woman, they're going to take one of two paths. They're either going to pour themselves into Alcoholics Anonymous or they're going to pour themselves into work, right? Trying to regain their footing. And what I did was at first I poured myself into Alcoholics Anonymous, but then I poured myself into work. And the work I had at that time was being a mom. And I felt I had all of this, I needed to make up for all the things I had done or not done. And so what I did is I got real busy because I love to be busy. So I became the baseball mom, the soccer mom, the PGA mom, the homeroom mom, the Sunday school mom. If there was a modifier for a mom, I did it. Okay. I got elected. I ran the show. I was doing it all. I'm busy. Oh, God dang, I was busy. And what happened in this busyness is that my six meetings a week went to four meetings a week, went to two meetings a week, went to one meeting a week, went to, I didn't get my chip this year. Oh yeah. I didn't get the chip next year either. And what happened for me is I slowly but surely lost my flipping mind. Right? Like I said, I was doing all the mom things, right? But I was such a self-seeker. It was like this. Oh yeah. I'm the homeroom. I mean, I'm the baseball mom. But if you don't put my son on first base, let me tell you, we're going to talk about it. You know what I mean? And I'll be the homeroom mom, or I'll be the PTA queen, but you better put my kids in the classes I think they need to be in, you know, like, and if you don't, you know, so I'm all up in your face. Nothing has changed for me. I'm just not drinking, you know? And so, wow. And as always happens, life continues to happen and life will continue to happen, whether I'm drunk or whether I'm sober, right? Doesn't matter. Life has no, it doesn't care. Life is going to go right on. And so what happened for me is my mother got sick. She died very, very quickly. And I was a wreck. I was a wreck, right? I was entirely dependent on her for my emotional security. And I became so enraged at God, because what I had done, what my spiritual life looked like, is that I had made a deal with God that, just like it says in our book, I'm going to stay close to you and perform your works well, and I'm going to get some remarkable things. So give me my remarkable things now, right? And when I didn't get what I thought were remarkable things, got pissed, right? I became angry and bitter and resentful. And that's what my spiritual life looked like. I mean, what a joy to be around. Don't you, aren't you just wanting to cozy right on up to it? Come on, who wouldn't want what I have? And be willing to go to any lengths to get it. So, man, what happened for me is I had a very, very dear friend who was very, very handsome. And you know how we alcoholics are. He'd only been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 19 years. He got a couple of months sober. I decided that was the man for me. I had 8 years without a drink. He had 20 minutes, and he was the man for me. And so he became my boyfriend. The only trouble is I still had a husband. So there was some overlap there. Now, you know, that whole thing where you go, well, I really don't want to lay that out there because people might judge me. Well, and then I go, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Come on. Look, you're going to judge me for having an affair when you held up a bank? Are you kidding me? You know, so like I said, this is my story. Now, had I wished I had done it differently? Of course I do. I don't want to hurt anybody. And there were people who got hurt. So I don't want to make light of it, but I want to tell you that story because it is my story. And I also want to talk to you about the depths of my spiritual malady, the depths of my spiritual illness, and never taking a drink, because that's what it was, right? I didn't take a drink, but I sure looked like I was drinking. I sure acted like I was drinking. I sure thought like I was drinking. Thank God I didn't have to take a drink, but God darn, I was close, right? So I would say my boyfriend with 5 months and me with 8 years, which one of us was sicker? Oh, well, let me help you. Hands down, it was me. It was me, without question. So this old boy, he's going to meetings. What? So you know what that means? I'm going to meetings, because I'm going to the meetings he's going to. I'm trying to chase him down. I'm terrified some other girl's going to find him and get him before I do. Because, you know, I got all those entanglements. But so I hunt him down and I want to give you a spoiler alert. I did chase that old boy down and I hooked him. Took a while. we were engaged for about 5 years, thankfully. And we've been together for 25 years. So it's worked out pretty good for us. But I got to tell you, it wasn't easy. You know, I love that idea that, you know, so I left the first old boy, married the love of my life. He's absolutely the love of my life, right? And that feeling of love, that warm glow, that desire to be with someone, that ain't enough. That ain't enough for a girl like me, right? Because I have been taught by some amazing people that love is an action. Love is absolutely an action word. It ain't a feeling. It's a decision. It's an action. It's a commitment. And hell, that's just real good sponsorship, ain't it? You know, and I want to kind of launch into a little bit about sponsorship, you know, because what I've also been taught is that God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called, right? And I had some amazing sponsors in my life. The first sponsor I had changed my life when she said, "You don't have any reason to trust me, but I'm asking you to trust me." Wow, what a concept. Well, and you know what? When you're a gal that can't stop drinking, what do you got to lose? What do you got to lose when someone who can stop drinking says, "Why don't you go ahead and trust me?" And I did, right? I had another gal who sponsored me who had this most encyclopedic knowledge of the big book. Thank God. When I was coming off of my untreated alcoholism, I found this woman who showed me the big book. She taught me how to read it. She showed me how to find myself in that book. Because until I had someone who sat down with me, and as my husband said, says, showed me the black parts of the book, you know what I thought the book was? A bunch of old guys. A bunch of old guys talking about the stock market. Didn't mean anything to me. Okay, there's some instructions on the inventory and some about 8 and 9, but I didn't get any of the rest of it, right? So I had another human being sit with me and show it to me. Thank God. Thank God. My sponsor after that taught me to treat my husband like the treasure that he is. I love her. She's this old West Texas bird. And she'd say, "Now, honey, do you think your husband's a treasure?" Because, you know, I'd call her complaining. "Do you think your husband's a treasure?" And I'd say, "Well, yes, ma'am, I do." She goes, "Well, then I think you need to treat him like the treasure that he is." I'm like, "But I don't know how to do that." And she told me what to do specifically, you know. Thank God. The sponsor I have today, you know what she does? She treats me. What she has taught me is love and service. And what she does for me is I call her and she behaves as though she has nothing better to do all day than take my phone call and talk to me. And more importantly, to listen to me. And it's remarkable. You know what? And what I love is she asked me this question consistently. And she, because, you know, I like to call her. We have a good relationship. And I'll start to chat, asking about her, blah, 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 blah. And finally, she'll just cut through the crap and say, "Honey, what's bothering you?" Ah, well, now that you mention it, right? Because I don't call my sponsor to, quote unquote, check in. Doesn't mean I don't call her regularly, because I do. But she and I have a relationship. She doesn't need me to check in on her. She's fine. She has a sponsor. She sponsors others. She doesn't need me to check in on her. Right? And I love that. And I love that level of relationship I get to have with another human being who understands alcoholism and who understands the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a treasure she is. You know, and so, but what's it like to sponsor, right? Because there's both sides of sponsorship. That's what keeps me sober, right? The what's it like to sponsor is because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. And I want to say, you know what? This sponsee of mine is mighty frustrating, right? What does that mean? I mean, she ain't doing what I'm telling her to do. That somehow my influence may be waning, and that's frustrating, right? Whatever. It's time consuming. You know, those folks are ungrateful. These are the things my alcoholism wants to tell me, right? And when my alcoholism is telling me all this stuff, it's just self-pity, which is one of the great gifts my sponsor has given me is, called her up one time and said, "You know what? I really think I'm in self-pity." Mind you, I've got 30 years when I'm telling her this. I think I'm in self-pity. And she goes, "Oh, darling, it's all self-pity." I was like, oh, I'm going to need a moment to think about that, you know? But I can tell you that because of the remarkable women in my life who've taken the time to so lovingly pass on what they have to me, that what it has afforded me is the opportunity to learn how to see God's handiwork right before my very eyes every single day. You see, I was also given the gift where someone said, "You know, baby, people don't come to you because you're so good. They come to you because you're very sick, and God knows you need every single one of them in your life. And that has been my experience. You see, it tells me in my book that helping others is the absolute foundation stone of my recovery. So, you know, I can tell you when I was chasing that old boy down, as you do, that I ended up in this quirky little AA meeting. You know, there are some meetings that people say, oh, that's a strong AA meeting. They come straight out of the literature and da 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 da. And I love those kinds of meetings, right? But when I was insane and chasing a boy down, I went to this little meeting, and it was quirky. I went to the meeting because he went to the meeting and all that kind of stuff. It was quirky. Nobody had a book. Never started on time. Never ended on time. I don't know if anybody actually had a sponsor. You know, we talked a lot about how we felt about things, right? We had a lot of feelings. We had a lot of inner child. A lot of things. Family of origin issues we needed to talk about, right? And I met a woman in there, and her name was KDP. And KDP, who was bonkers, by the way, at that time, as we all were, came up to me one day and she says, hey, can you sponsor me? And I'm like, well, you see, one of the things God's given me is a very healthy ego. Some might say, too healthy. And what my ego allowed me to do was go, well, you know what? Now that you mention it, I believe I can sponsor you. I'd be glad to. See, now, I hadn't worked a step in I don't know how many years. I didn't have a book. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have any of those things. But I did have an ego. It's not always a defect, right? And I said, I'd be glad to. And she, you know, and when she asked me to sponsor her, she saved my life. And that's how this thing works, you see, because she pulled me in. Because of that ego, I thought, oh, God darn, I better get a book. Because she's starting to ask me questions about what's in this book. So I actually ought to better read it, you know? And I started to read it. And I stayed one page in front of her. And I also had remembered, you know, all these things came bubbling up like, oh, I think a sponsor might be important. So I got one of those too, right? And then I recognized that, you know what? When you have a book and a sponsor, the next thing you do is work steps. So I started doing that, right? And it's that one act of, can you sponsor me? That saved my life. And not and the way this thing works, and I've already touched on it, is it not only saved my life, it saved the life of my family, of my children, of my children's children. This thing had that beautiful ripple effect. Beautiful ripple effect, right? We are on a life and death errand here. Don't ever, ever lose sight of that. We are uniquely qualified to help that still suffering alcoholic. We can reach the alcoholic when no one else can. Not your mama, not your priest, not your rabbi, not your doctor, right? None of those people. Not your psychiatrist, your therapist. None of those people are going to reach me. They don't understand who I am, but you do. You can reach me in a matter of minutes. All you have to do is say, oh, yeah. I'm a bad drunk. And I couldn't stay sober when I was pregnant. And I go, oh my God, I got someone I can talk to. I got someone who understands me, uniquely qualified. Because this whole thing is about one alcoholic talking to another, sharing experience, strength, and hope. I want to tell you about this story. My daughter, who's now 27 years old, she's been with her boyfriend her fiance for a long time. She's not an alcoholic and neither is he. How bizarre is that? But it's true. And she came to me a couple of years ago, and she and her fiance were getting engaged. And she said to me, Mama, everything I know about love, I've learned from you and Cecil. Now, that to me is the arc of my sobriety. Right? Because remember, I'm the mother whose little boy had a bucket on his head, and he just wanted it to stop. And because of you and everything you've taught me, I now have a child who can look at me and say, everything I know about love, I've learned from you. And the truth of the matter is, everything I've learned about love, I've learned from you. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I will end my story with something that, you know, is indisputable, because it's the last talk that Dr. Bob gave. And this stuff chokes me up every time I read it. And I just want to share it with you if you haven't read it in a while. Maybe you read it this morning. I hope you did. But it says, there are two or three things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Simple, but not easy. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Skips down a little bit and says, and one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts in our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us. So I like to say, if you're not working these steps like your life depends upon it, please come on in. Let us show you how. We'd be so honored to. That's all I got. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to allow people to unmute and thank Marty. That was beautiful.
Thank you, Marty. So good.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you so much, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty. That was great.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank y'all so, so much. Really appreciate y'all being here.
Oh. All right, I'll take the meeting back. I'll mute everybody. Let's give Marty a little break. And I'll try to get the lump out of my throat. I'm going to remind everyone to submit your questions to Larry, who is under the user questions. When we reconvene in a few minutes, we'll start asking our dear Marty some questions. Whatever you want to know, just ask. Let's see, the seventh tradition states, I put the link again in the chat for the seventh tradition. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I would be happy to take a couple of AA announcements if anybody has them by show of hands. Anybody? Amy, who we got on the table tomorrow night? Bueller.
Sorry. We have Blind Dave A and his wife Norma from Austin, Texas. Step 11.
Awesome.
Right on. Thank you, Amy. Ebony, you got an announcement?
Yes,
Yes. Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. Next Saturday at 10 a.m., the state delegate will be giving her report. You can find that information on tidewaterintergroup.org under calendars, events, and workshops. That is Saturday, the 12th, 10 a.m., delegates report. Thanks.
Thank you, Ebony. I forgot to do that. That's going to be exciting. We only got a week's notice for the delegates report, but I hope everybody will see fit to check in on that. It's really kind of a special event, only once a year. Anybody else? I don't see. All right, the Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. So that's that. Yay. Let's see what kind of questions we got. All right, we got some questions coming in. Keep them coming, y'all. Marty, that was amazing. Just delightful.
Thank you, David.
Our first question comes in, and it's, why is it important to do a nightly review?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, for me, the reason it's important is it's important for me to have that reconnect with my creator. Especially in the evening. It also gives me an opportunity to reconsider things that I may have missed in a 10-step and to reconsider how I showed up throughout the day. So it's just another tool in my belt to try to develop that conscious contact with my creator. A brief answer.
All right. How do I treat others like the treasure that they are?
Oh, yes. Well, that is very interesting too. I remember having that very same question. And what it really comes down to is kindness. And I was so consumed by my old ideas that kindness equaled weakness. And that if I were kind, that level of vulnerability that comes with kindness would make me a fool and a doormat and would put me in danger. And so what it also means is taking that risk, and that risk of being honest, not only with yourself, but with someone else about how important they are to you. And to do the work, for me, it was vital to do the work where I had made that decision to love that treasure regardless of whether I got loved back. See, I was always a transaction for me. And so as long as love is a transaction, there is no treasure, right? It's only a deal. It's only a bargain. And so it really is love and kindness to me.
Ah, thank you. Well, this question came in before you told the Katie P story, and I love this because the question was it sponsorship that pulled you out of the dry drunk? Yes. And it sounds like it kind of was, only not in the way that we expected it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you want to share a little bit about that or a little more, or maybe we're done with that one.
I think I addressed it pretty well in my story, you know, but the key piece, of course, to reiterate is that someone asked me to sponsor them. And it's that pressure from us, you know, from sponsee that and pride, you know, that forced me to go up a food chain into someone who could then help me. And so that's what, you know, all of it pulled me out of dry drunk or untreated alcoholism. Yes, but the first act was being asked to be a sponsor.
Well, and I love the example of our character defects being put to good use.
Absolutely. That's why we offer the good and the bad, because I don't know which one's which, but my creator does. He's going to use everything he can.
The next question is, how were you able to balance making amends to your children versus spoiling them or overcompensating for your past?
What a great question, too. You know, I'm a one that does not believe in living amends. I believe in direct amends. So I believe that what it says is I practice these principles in all my affairs. So can I practice the principles of love and discipline and all the other principles that are necessary as a parent? I also did a lot of overcompensating. I'd love to tell you that I've been a great parent since I sobered up, but that's not been the case. I've made a lot of mistakes. And so I have had to really rely on other parents and other members of Alcoholics Anonymous, people who've had children, all the kinds of things that we do. So I think, I love what it talks about in the evening review. We ask God for forgiveness and ask about corrective measures, right? And so I can take lots and lots of corrective measures in my life. I just also have to recognize, as my sponsor today tells me, she goes, darling, the best you can hope for is a human experience. That's it. That's as elevated as you're going to get is a human being. And so that means human beings make mistakes all the time. So how do I balance that? I'm just, you know what? My sponsor gave me this beautiful prayer that says, God, I don't know if I'm doing your will or not, but I hope that my desire to do so pleases you. Mm.
Have you had to change your sponsor? Hold on. Let me read the black part. Have you had to change how you sponsor others during COVID? How can we be helpful to the newcomer during this time?
Right. What a challenge. I have had to sponsor people differently because I don't have them to my home and I don't see them at meetings and things like that. So I am not afraid to do inventory via Zoom. I've done quite a few of them. There's a little bit different dynamic that happens when it's two people on Zoom as opposed to, you know, 200. Finding the newcomer, I think, is just as important. You know, I'm not one who waits for a newcomer to call me because I couldn't have called someone with 30 years when I had 30 minutes. So I call them, I text them, I reach out to them, I check on them. When I get on a Zoom call and they're there, I'm going to chat them up ahead of time. I always get on the Zoom calls at least 15 minutes early and expect to stay at least 15 minutes late. So it's still, you know, it's still working the steps. I picked up a sponsee a couple of months ago, and God love her. She was as hungry as anybody I've ever encountered, and we worked all 12 steps in about 30 days, and she is sponsoring others, and it's been every bit as miraculous as it always has been. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Let's see, you mentioned that you dove into work after a few years of sobriety and drifted away from the program. Mm-hmm. What can we do to prevent that from happening?
Well, that's sometimes there's nothing. Sometimes that's all about someone's spiritual journey. Sometimes that's about someone between them and God. It always is, right? I think a lot of times what happens is, and some of the other women can talk about this too, is that women with small children have a hard time getting supported. Babysitting is really important to young families. It's not just women, it's men too. Having babysitting available for young families is vital, vital, if we wanna keep those young families in our fold. So I think that's important. And like I say, you know, sometimes one of my friends, Larcine, says, one of the reasons that people leave Alcoholics Anonymous is because they cease to be amazed, right? and that the miraculousness of sobriety becomes commonplace. Lose sight of that. And so how can I keep someone inspired? That's a challenging one. It also tells me that if one is to find God, the desire must come from within. All I can do is be an example, a demonstration, if you will. And keep checking on people, keep checking on people, keep checking on people.
Marty, is there such a thing as too many sponsees?
Well, that's a question. That's a good question. It depends on who you are. And I think it also, for example, I sponsor a lot of people. Most of the people I sponsor have a lot of sobriety. Not only do they have a lot of sobriety, they also, if you're working with me, are going to be sponsoring a lot of other people, right? That to me is a significant factor in, you know, if I'm sponsoring someone who's sponsoring 10 people or 12 people, that person is awfully busy doing their own thing. And so the chances are, you know, they don't need me to sit with them on a daily basis. They just don't. And so I think it's, I couldn't give you, you know, 25 is too many, or 10 is too many, or 8's not enough, or whatever that is. It depends on who you are. And I think that if you are close to your creator and are trying to listen carefully, that God will make it evident. God will make it evident whether you need to be sponsoring this person or these people or not. That's been my experience.
Right on. Can you share a little bit about your experience with step 6 and 7?
Of course, I love step 6 and 7. For me, that, like it says in the 12 and 12, it's what separates the men from the boys. It's where I'm actually beginning to move from a self-centered objective to a God-centered objective, right? When I've done the first 5 steps, what I get to understand, especially in that 5th step, is who and what I really am, running on self-will. What is an extreme example of self-will one right? Well, just look at your inventory. It'll tell you, or it tells me, right? And so then when I'm ready to roll into 6 and 7, and I'm asking God to build with me, you know, to change me, because that's what I'm asking, you know, remove the shortcomings, remove the defects, whatever he thinks are shortcomings and defects, right? Ego's not always bad. Pride isn't either. It's just when they get, when instincts run awry is when they become those things. So, but what I love about step 6 is that, you know, it's all about that willingness. Am I willing? And I love the built-in alcoholic factor where it says, if there's something we still cling to, right? Meaning when I've looked at that inventory and I've discovered what I value and I look at the fact-facing, fact-finding process, and I've looked at all this, I've seen what I am as an extreme example of self-will run right, there may be some things I still like. And so I'm still going to cling to them. You bet I am. Remember, the best I can hope for is a human experience. And so then I have to ask God to help me be willing. And I love that I bring in 7 the good and the bad, right? So that God can make those decisions, that God can be, because I'm all of 6 and 7 is about becoming who God wants me to be, right? 1 through 5 has told me all about who I want me to be. I don't know if that makes sense. I could talk about 6 and 7 for a whole week.
Well, let's back up another couple of steps for the benefit of the newcomer. You talked about the shame and the remorse around your children. I was just wondering if you'd like to share that first inventory, that first 5th step. Anything there?
Sure. My first 5th step, I love it when it says we made a list of our grosser handicaps, right? For the first 10 years, if I'm honest with you, the first 10 years of my sobriety, I could not tell you that I was unable to stop drinking when I was pregnant. too much shame, too much humiliation. I could not bring that to you. I couldn't, right? And I still believe that if I ignored things or didn't say them out loud, that perhaps they didn't happen, which I later have found out is not accurate. And so I know that the moment I got home from my first fifth step, well, I was still in treatment. So the moment I got back to my room, my cell, if you will, what I discovered is that there were volumes of stuff I had left out that were also grosser handicaps, which is the power of the fifth step to me. In the sense, and we talk about this in my neighborhood, that when I do that fifth step, I take all of these dead bodies, it's going to be a little graphic, all of these dead bodies float to the surface of the pond, right? And with that inventory, 6, 7, 8, 9, I get to gather those bodies and the water is clear, right? But what that clear water does is permit enough room for more bodies to come to the surface, right? And I get to look again, and I get to look again. And for me, the steps are not linear, they're circular. I keep going round and round and round and round that merry-go-round, 1 through 12, 1 through 12, 1 through 12, 1 through 12. So I, you know, I like to say I've done 572 inventories on my husband, just him, not to mention bosses and siblings and daughters-in-law and children and all the other people I've done inventories on. That's what it looks like for me. So I love the fact that I got to do an inventory very early on in sobriety, and I look at it and I go, oh my goodness. I do know today that I could never stay sober at 30 years on that first inventory. But I also know that the inventory I wrote last week, and I did write an inventory last week, would not have been possible for me 30 years ago.
All right. So we've got a question here. I've been sober for a little while now and never sponsored anyone. Do I really need to sponsor others to stay sober?
Well, I have a saying. If you want to hear what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is where my solution lies, right? Want to hear what's in it, get a sponsor. But if you want to really understand and know what's in it, sponsor someone else. So I believe that it's the key. You know, it talks about throughout our literature, you know, like the dark past is my greatest asset. With that, I can help others avert misery and death. No big deal. Just going to help people do that. That being able to do that is what gives my life so much meaning today. And purpose and value, and our book is just replete with all the reasons why I should be doing it. And I certainly know that our founders did it with such zeal. Dr. Bob is reported to have worked with over 5,000 people in the 16 years he was sober. 5,000. 5,000 people. The man was busy. And he stayed sober, so if it worked for him, I think I'll do the same.
Right on. Outside of sponsorship, what has been your favorite service position and why?
Oh, this is good. You know what? I moved. My husband and I were living in Austin, downtown Austin, for many, many years, and he has a family ranch about 25 miles in Buda, which is about 25 miles south of Austin. We moved out there, and I knew that if I was going to continue my having my home group be 25 miles away, I wasn't going to go. You know, I'm a sloth, right? And so I knew I had to find, and I wanted also to find a group in my neighborhood. And I did. We had one, the Buda Big Book groups, right? Is literally 3 miles from my place. And so, boy, they were happy to see me. But when I got there, what I wanted to do was, get involved and yet be respectful. And so what I did was I became the self-appointed greeter. at the Beauty Big Book Group. Nobody elected me to that post. I just made it up. And so I stood on the porch and I welcomed everybody for 18 months. I'd say, welcome to the Beauty Big Book Group. Now, we're not a big group, but I did that. And let me tell you, I got to know every single person in that group, as well as all the visitors and the speakers. And I had a ball doing it. So that's been, I swear to God, my favorite. I've been on the committee, blah, 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 done all the things, right, that those of us who've been around for a while have done. But that was super fun. I really enjoyed it.
Beautiful.
Silly, but, you know, I was told when I got a new home group, first of all, when I moved to A, declare a home group, I believe in that, and then to get involved in that home group. And that was the best way I knew how to do it. And to act like a newcomer.
I have a question here. I spent many years focused on my family and drank to escape. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to be a little selfish about my recovery now and focus on me and self-care?
Well, here's the thing. All I do is focus on me. That's all I've ever done. So I think our book is full of, for a man to say that staying sober is enough, he's sorely mistaken. He's certainly not doing enough. And we owe a lot to the people we have so poorly treated over these many years. One of the things I never really have had any difficulty with is self-care. You know, like they say, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. And so, I try to be in love and service in my home and in my family. And I am in a sponsorship lineage that says that that is our function. And that, you know, why wouldn't we want to give to our families? Why wouldn't we want to do that? Why wouldn't we want to be there for them? Why wouldn't we want to be generous and kind and loving and grateful to them? So I have a real problem with the self-care thing. I think that's just another way to stake out being selfish. And I don't need any help in that regard. I really don't. In fact, I'm constantly asking my creator to relieve me of the bondage of self, because I truly do believe it is indeed bondage. Mm.
What do you look for in a sponsor?
What is so attractive to me today about my sponsor? First of all, I admire my sponsor greatly. I think she is truly personifies love and service, generosity. She has an encyclopedic knowledge of our literature, and then some. She's brilliant. She is also one of the kindest people I've ever encountered. It chokes me up just when I think about it. And talk about selfless, you know? Those are the things, like I say, someone with a complete, absolute working knowledge of the steps and an unending love for Alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right on. We have one final question for you this evening. You've been very generous with your time. I wonder, you've shared a little bit about it, but I wonder if you want to just talk a little bit about the value of a home group or your experience, what home groups have done for your sobriety.
Mm-hmm. I think it's vital. I think there's a difference. Someone helped me understand the differentiation between being a member of a home group and simply attending meetings. See, if I'm just attending meetings, I have no investment. I don't have an investment of time. I don't have an investment of passion. I don't have an investment in service or participation, right? Sure, it's, you know what? Business meetings and group conscious meetings, you bet they're a pain in the ass. You bet. But, you know, I absolutely believe that I have a responsibility as well as a duty and obligation. Nobody likes to hear those words. Nobody wants to hear that we have a duty or an obligation. But if I really truly want to put my money where my mouth is, which is where I want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to always be there, for that I am responsible, all these kinds of things that you'll hear people say all the time, and they never show up to your group conscious meeting, or they never declare a home group or anything like that. You know, I can't tell you how many people say, well, I don't really have a home group. It's like, really? Okay. So I believe that having a commitment to a home group, you know, being committed to a home group, participating in that home group, participating in the business of the home group, participating in the actions of the home group, are what make a home group. Otherwise, we're just going to a meeting. Going to a meeting like in my story, when I talk about the fact that I could look to the right of the big meat giant meeting room and know Mona was right there, meant everything. And that's because she was committed to that meeting, to that as her home group. She was a vibrant member of that home group. And this is what we're bringing to the table when we do that. We're full-fledged members of the group. And so, I don't know if that's very articulate, but it means everything to me. And, you know, like I said, yeah, business meetings are a pain in the ass. But that's what we do. I mean, we work through our pains in the ass together. Not that y'all would ever have differences of opinion in your group. I know you don't. But boy, we sure do.
Oh, thank you so much. Once again, that's another quick 90 minutes. I'd like to thank everyone who participated, and after we close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer, we'll have the opportunity to thank Marty one more time. Thank everyone who participated, Larry for doing the questions, co-hosts, home group members, newcomers, all of you. Just love you. Thank you for being here tonight. I'm going to share my screen and ask if BJ would do the last three paragraphs on 164, please. Mm.
I'd love to. Thank you so much, Marty. That was wonderful.
Thanks, BJ.
A Vision for You, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, BJ. Thank everybody. I'm going to allow people to unmute, so you can mute or unmute as you see fit. Let's virtually circle up. Have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Ah, Marty, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You're too kind. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.